Welcome back to another episode of It's All Bad. I'm Keith.
I'm Rush and Danny.
How was your week?
Dude, pretty chill. Yeah. Pretty chill. I went to Pride yesterday. Like, totally on accident, you know? Like, I was just in the neighborhood, and I was like, let's go check it out. You know, I haven't been in a while. What's weird is, when I was a kid, my mom was like, you can't, because we grew up in, we moved with the Russians to West Hollywood, and it's predominantly gay and Russian. And my mom was like, that when that Pride shit goes on, like, you're not allowed to leave the house, like, you know, like, they're, you know, they'll take advantage of you. And I was like, that's bananas, you know?
Yeah.
So I would, like, from when I was, like, 7 till 10 or 11, I wasn't allowed to leave the house on Pride weekend, you know?
Fuck.
Which is nuts, you know? And yesterday I showed up and I fucking rode a float through the parade.
Of course you did. Needle exchange float. Yeah. Like Danny riding a big rig. Yeah. When I was in the boys' home in Silver Lake in 87, you know, we walked to school from there and whatever. And, you know, mm-hmm. Silver Lake was predominant. At that time, had a lot of gay people. I don't know if it does so much anymore. But I remember we're all in the van, and it's like boys, you know, from all over California, like probably 15 of us were in this van. We come over Sunset, or come over Mitchell Terrain and hit Sunset, and we're like, whoa, it's like looked like a parade, right? Mm-hmm. But it was like all these dudes in like black leather and the leather hats and the chains and shit. We're like, what the fuck? You know, we didn't know anything about gay culture, so, but we were like, we thought it was like a heavy metal thing. we're like, fuck, there's a lot of dudes dressed like Rob Halford here, like the singer Judas Priest. We're like, fuck, whoa, this is like, yeah. And they were like, oh, shit. You know,
yeah. Like, yeah, it was super fun. I had, you know, it was great.
Yeah, I know.
We literally walked up. I haven't been in years. And we walked up to a float and I was like, hey, can I get on? And they were like, yeah, sure. Come on.
Also, it's like, fuck, man. It's like Pride Week is the only time where there's real happiness mm-hmm. in America anymore, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, that's it. Other than that, everything's a fucking bummer, you mm-hmm. know?
And it's so cool to see people just coming out with their kids and just, you know, like, just showing support. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's
except
so rare.
Coachella. Coachella's great because it gets everybody the fuck out of L.A.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's a great weekend. Magic. Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
They're neck and neck for the best weekends in L.A.
So today, we're going to have a few stories. We have a guy named JonBenet and then a couple of juggalos. Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop. Not the JonBenet you think.
Not that JonBenet.
Yeah, not that
one. A different JonBenet. Yeah. That does come up. That's an incredible story, actually.
We got, Rocco and Mo, Juggalos. Juffalos now. I guess they've been disowned from.
Oh, they were kicked out or whatever?
I don't know if they were kicked out, but they were, you know.
Yeah.
Oh. I think it's like a, like you got to keep practicing, you know? Like you can't turn your back.
It's like not going to church.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dude. Not drinking Faygo.
Yeah.
Cheap ass. Sodas and shit.
Have you ever had one before? Have you ever had a favorite?
No, but I'm fascinated by juggalos in general.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the funniest thing. If you watch that documentary about them, they're kind of amazing. Mm. Like, and we forgot to get into the rules, but Rocco's dad was telling me, he goes, you got to have him tell you the rules. He said, there's like one, like, if a juggalo's hungry, you got to give him half your sandwich. Shit like that. You know, like, exactly what you would think, you know, like.
Yeah, they take care of their own.
Yeah. Yeah. They really do look out for it. If you watch mm-hmm. the documentary, is short, you guys should both watch it. It's pretty great. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's like 30 minutes. We'll bring Rocco, Mo, the Juggalos back to break down the Juggalo lifestyle and the rules and shit. And what was the other one?
Mo.
Oh, yeah. Shit. And Mo getting
a massage.
Footloose. Yeah. Footloose and fancy free. Yeah. Once again, you know, we're not glorifying any of this shit because every one of these stories, it's like it was a fucking awful time in all of our lives. But that's what we like to find humor in it now. And they are pretty goddamn funny. They weren't funny at the time.
No, absolutely not.
They were fucking bummer at the time.
Absolutely not. And Mo was pretty bummed, I think, when that happened.
Mo's is a fucking bummer.
Oh, yeah.
But none of, you know, like that's what I was saying, like none of them. None of us have a story like ending up on a yacht, you know, with a bunch of beautiful women or anything like that, or fucking hanging out with Puff Daddy or any of that.
Yeah.
It's awful. It really is. It's all bad. It really is all bad.
It is all bad. I did end up at a party at Puff Daddy's house once.
Of course you did.
Yeah. Man. And I stole cologne from him. Sorry. Sorry, Diddy.
That's amazing.
I think I owe you some Burberry.
Strung out?
Oh, yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was crazy. It wasn't even like, it wasn't even his party, but it was like a party for who, man, who was it for? I thought it was for, I think we thought it was for, it was first, we thought it was for some actor, but it was like some dude off the hills, and it was, they rented out Diddy's house. Yeah. I don't even know if it was his.
No shit.
Yeah.
Rowdy.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the closest I've been to being on a yacht with, with I think he was Puff Daddy at the time.
Fuck. John, can you tell us a story from London?
My London crack story. Was it crack? I guess it was methamphetamine. Yeah. Crystal meth.
Yeah, it was meth.
You know, it's funny. I have notes from those days. I actually have notes.
Raise that up and just speak.
But and I feel like I shouldn't use them because everyone else is ad-libbing. But I am older than everyone else. And I have like... I heard there's a test for people, like they can tell you if you have Alzheimer's like 16 years in advance.
Oh.
And I'm probably due for...
Wait, how many years?
16 years. 16 years. Yeah. You can get an Alzheimer's test. I mean, no, they'll be able to tell you in 16 years if you know that you're going to have it. Can you hear me?
Yeah, slide there.
Over this way.
There you go.
Anyway, but you know what I feel like with those two stories? They were more to do with cars than they were to do there's like a car theme also, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to get into that. But I can tell you about meth. Which wasn't really my thing, you know. I drank, and I remember, and anyway, I drank a lot. And then the summer is 1984. It was the summer of 1984. Do you guys remember Frankie Goes to Hollywood?
Yeah.
And and war.
Yeah.
And this is what. This is the outside. Yeah, that's not bad, right? Yeah. I remember that.
Does this involve you wearing a Frankie Says Relax shirt?
Yeah, right. You guys saw this great.
I did.
But that was like the time. I was in London.
Oh my God! So you're in London.
I was in London.
You're really
19-
feeling it.
Okay. Put the headphones on. Oh. Too.
All right. I was in London, 1984. Frankie Goes to Hollywood was just going. And anyways.
Is this pre-body double, I wonder?
No. How'd you end up in London,
though,
John?
I was about to say that.
Yeah, right?
No, I ended up in London. I don't smoke either, but I'm going to take this cigarette and just light it. I was 19. And I just got a work visa at a place called CIEE, which I don't know what that stands for anymore, but I do remember that. It's just really weird. But you could get work visas and have these exchange programs. So anyway, what would happen is I would get a job in London or wherever, and then someone else from there could get a job in America. So it was like an exchange. Work exchange program for young people. And anyway, so I ended up working. It was really weird. I was in 1984 in London, and they just built like one of those first, like back then they didn't really have that many malls, you know, the way that we know them now. And they built a mall called the Trocadero. And this was a really big thing. And they had on all the different floors, they had all these different restaurants. And you'd have like an Italian restaurant, you'd have a Chinese restaurant, and they had a Guinness Book of World Records thing, and it was all like in one place. And I don't know, for some reason, I think it's because I was young and 19 and the two accountants that ran it were gay, and they wanted me to, I collected all the money from all the places, and I would be drunk and I would drink
from
while I was
all
working.
All of the places at the truck.
All the places at the Trocadero, I was like the bad guy for it. Mm. And I would pick up all the money and I would take it around and I would give it to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'd count it and that would be my job. Anyway, I got fired because I was drunk all the time. And then, but then I got into meth for some reason.
That seems right.
Yeah. But I know what it was. It was really weird. I had never gotten into meth. I didn't know really what it was. I still don't really know what it is. And it was crystal meth, they called it. And I was at one of the nightclubs where they had Frankie Goes to Hollywood and all that stuff.
God, I bet that was a great club.
And it was awesome. So it was the Mud Club.
Wow.
In London.
Oh, wow.
1984.
There was a London counterpart to the New York one?
Yeah, I guess so. Oh. And it was a huge thing. Oh. And that's where I found the meth. But anyway, so what happened was, like Keith was talking about, I was up all night, and I decided, because I was in college at one point prior to that, and I thought I should do something cultural, and I wanted to go to a castle, and so I'd been up the whole night before, and I went to wait for a bus that could take you to this castle, but I didn't know that in London you had to wave for buses. Uh-huh. You know, like they just would go by you if you didn't wave for the bus. They had all these different buses and they just kept going by me. And I was like, why are these buses stopping? And so anyway, I went to this park across the street, and I was so tired from being up all night from taking meth. And I fell asleep, and it was a pretty sunny day in London, weirdly. And I fell asleep the entire day in this park. And I got the most severe sunburn like you would ever know. Like I my whole face just blistered up into, you know, I didn't look like myself. It was pretty intense. But luckily I was living in a hospital. I know it sounds really weird, but a friend of the family's worked at a hospital, and he got me a room where people who worked at the hospital, you know, lived. So I lived at the hospital. So I went to the emergency room and all that stuff. Anyway, so I stayed at the hospital, and they told me not to leave for like several days, and to let all the swelling go down from the, you know, sunburn. So meanwhile, I was doing more and more of the methamphetamine, and you know, because I had some, and I was really into it, as you know, and I hadn't done it before, and I really liked it, and I was just snorting it, and I was like, you know, anyway, and I was in the hospital, and it was just weird, and then finally I'd run out of it, and I had to go out and get some more. So I went out. And it was, and then sort of going stepping back a little bit, I'd met this woman at the Trocadero who worked in the Italian restaurant. And it was really weird because she didn't speak English, but because we did drugs and we had sex and we had, you know, we just had this, you know, way of bonding that didn't involve needing to know each other's language. And,
beyond language.
And it was, anyway, she also had a boyfriend.
Mm.
And I know it's sort of paranoid and racist, but he was an older Saudi Arabian guy and very wealthy. And I used to think that he was like, you know, he was sort of like going to come after me. And when I was out there, I thought he was going to like sort of kidnap me and want to put me into white slavery. And I know that sounds insane, but this was the story.
Yes.
And so I was out trying to get meth. I was like running around from this guy who I thought wanted to kidnap me to get revenge for being with his girlfriend. And I was, you know, because I had been doing meth in the hospital for something, probably about 3 or 4 days. And I did that. And then what happened was, while I was running around, I started to molt, sort of like a snake. And I started to,
what's that?
Like, oh, my skin shedding. Started to come
right.
off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when I was in the park, I didn't have my shirt on.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in Piccadilly Circus. It was like 4 a.m. And I just started, all my skin just started to come off. And I just started, and I was like peeling off my face. I was peeling off my whole body.
Yeah.
It started to shed.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, and I thought that I was, you know, I was dying. And I couldn't believe it was happening. And I was going from place to place and running around from this guy who I thought wanted to kidnap me. And I was like Keith, half naked, and I was molting. And that was sort of it. And then I just And I ended up going to the airport and going home, and I just you know, I fell apart as a human being, and I ended up you know, just going to my sister's house and staying there for a week and trying not to to do any of that anymore. And I did
getting sunburns.
Yeah, I stopped getting sunburns. Yeah. I stopped doing methamphetamine, and I didn't go go back to London. I lost my job and I was, you know, and that was my, and that's the thing. That's the only time I ever did crystal meth. And, yeah, that was it. And I survived to come
and now
here
you're here
and that's tell you good. That story. I feel like it should be better.
No. No, no, what do you mean? No,
but yeah, you closed hard.
Come
that
on.
Was
but,
great. Yeah, that was great.
But I, what I thought, I was thinking a little bit, what I thought was it would be cool to talk about, like, what does it say? Like, what do you do after you stop doing crystal meth? Mm. What do you do after you stop drinking, right? Like, what is it like, you know?
You mean just like after a session? Or do you yeah, mean just, like no, after
just
in life?
Just in general.
Oh, in life.
You
yeah.
know, like, what do, you know, when you stop doing drugs? You know what I mean? Mm. And I wanted to read you something.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to read you what it was like for me after I did drugs.
Okay.
And that'll be my last thing. And I'll do it very quickly.
That's great.
Okay. So I would eat a lot. Right? I would watch movies. And I went back to school. I'd write school papers. And I got a job at a theater where I set up the chairs for the theaters. Right? Mm-hmm. But I missed this feeling, this sort of satiating feeling you'd get when you'd do something bad. You know what I mean? When you do something bad, it feels good, you know, when you're a bad person. So I really miss that. And I miss the adrenaline rush I got from drugs. I miss not knowing whether I was going to get caught by the police. I missed when I used to deal drugs also. I don't know if I should admit that, but I was a drug dealer and I missed selling drugs. And I used to wear this thing. It was like a bracelet, but it had these spikes on it. I don't seem like a violent person, I know, but I had one of like, it was like brass knuckles, but it had spikes. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And I wore it pretty regularly. And and in case someone wanted to take my drugs, I could like slash their face.
Did you ever have to do that? Or was it enough just to wear it?
No, but I missed it.
Right, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So what do, right? You have all this tension, you're distracted from all this aggressive anxiety, right? And it makes you want to do things like light people's houses on fire and stuff, which I did.
Took a turn.
I did that once. I did do that, but I put it out.
After the meth.
And it was fine. Yeah, after the meth. And but it was crazy. I was stressed out, I was angry, I was depressed, you know what I mean? And so I tried to figure out what I could do, right? So what I did was, so what kind of relief? You know, I missed the relief I got from doing drugs in the morning. I missed the relief I got from like getting high every morning. And then I was also in a mental hospital once. But and they did sort of give me some strategies, you know, for how to deal with that stuff. So I tried to sort of, you know, meditate and try and be, you know, sort of a, you know, I did go, I was even going to AA meetings at this time. But anyway, I went over to this friend of mine's house and I saw him there. And it was weird. He was a DJ and he worked during the day. And I went to his house and he was like naked. You know what I mean? And he was like under his covers. He wasn't just stuck. I mean, he had this giant like bottle of like, you know, of Vaseline, a 2-liter bottle of Coke and a pack of Old Golds. And he would stay in his house all day and masturbate. You know what I mean? And I'd never thought about that, man. I jerked off sometimes. I never spent an entire day masturbating. You know what I mean? I thought that would sound like a way to try and pass the time. So it was this whole thing. And then I was thinking like, wow, you could jerk off a lot as a way to sort of get around it. I thought, all right, so I could try that. And then I started getting into, you know, and then I thought I'd never been to a strip club before. Mm-hmm. Right. So I would sort of spend the days like jerking off, you know, chain smoking. And then at night, I would go to these strip bars, right? And then at night, you could go see these strippers. And what was interesting about that was that then you could sort of enjoy, there was like peace. You know what I mean? You could sort of locate in your mind this sort of strange, sort of detached decadence. You know what I mean? That you could sort of, you know, they relieve you from all this, like sort of this awful existence of basically only, you know, being sober. You know, your first, you know, year being surprised, being sober. And it was sort of like going to, you know, going to church. You know what I mean? And but anyway, so it's almost a state of grace, you know, the pale skin of a stripper and her toes crammed in the high heeled boots and tongue coming out of her mouth, and you could just concentrate on the, you know, the contours of her naked body. Anyway, so I would do that. And then that was sort of how I got through my first year of sobriety. And that was sort of like one thing led to another. And I could tell you a lot more, but I just wanted to say that, you know, there are other things you can do besides crystal meth. Yeah. And I just didn't want to like leave everyone with that empty feeling, you know, just not knowing that there's alternatives. Yeah,
there's another way.
There's another way to live.
Old golds.
Yeah, old golds.
And
Coca-Cola.
Rubbing the skin
chronic
off of
masturbation.
Your cock.
And strip bars.
Just take yourself entirely out of society. There you go.
Anyway, that was just a small period of my life. I'm much better now. Oh, anyway, great. Thanks for letting me share.
Yeah, thank you.
I can't say any more, for God's sake.
Keith, you want to hop on this one?
Yeah.
Sounds good
to me. All right. So, my name is Rocco. It's Mo. Me and Mo have known each other since we were like, 11? I don't know. Yeah, 11 years old, something like that, like 6th or 7th grade.
We met.
He was from Florida.
I'm from Florida.
Which explains a lot about him.
Whereabouts in Florida?
Mm-hmm. I say Fort Lauderdale. I'm from Davie County. When I moved to LA at 12, I'd never seen anyone but a white person in my life. And I went to public school in NoHo.
Yep.
It fucking shook me, dude.
He went to my middle school, Walter Reed.
I was the minority there. It was Mexican.
Yeah.
And I'm from a Montessori school. I don't know if any of you know what that is.
Some hippie shit.
In Florida, I'm wearing purple girl corduroys.
Crew pants. I don't know if you guys, do you remember when everyone was in a crew pants?
Yeah, I mean tighter than tight, and like rainbow sweaters. And I'm in a school where like these kids are already like gangbanging. And dude, it turned my world upside down. They fucking beat me up I left after 5 days.
So in Walter Reed back in the day, they had tracks. They had the track system, like A track, B track, C track. And the A track was always like all the white kids, regular school schedule. B track was like, you know, I was on B track. You'd go to school during the summer. He was on B track. And when everyone else would come back to school after the regular summer, then we'd go on summer. And B track was kind of fucked up. Like it was a little bit of a mix.
It was
like,
everyone who didn't like register on time.
Like they were like, oh, you're a white kid. And then they met my mom. You know what I mean, kid? Yeah. And they're like, oh, wait, you can go to B track. You know what I mean? So they're like, and then C track was all fucked up. So he was on B track.
I got beat up 5 days straight. And then I just left. I just didn't go back.
You went to Milliken.
I went to an art school.
Oh.
Yeah.
Game changer.
So when I met him, I thought I was a fucking little cholo on B track. You know what I mean? And he looked like Kurt Cobain, and that fucking pissed me off because, of course, I was like chunky and all the chicks were into the Kurt Cobain dude from Davie County. And I was like, fuck this dude. You know what I mean? So
We were supposed to fight, and then
like somehow, you know, we were kids, dude. We were like 12, so it came up that like he smoked weed and I smoked weed.
I was
weed.
Like, we were getting ready, and I go, let me put down my kush. And he was like, hold on, you smoke kush? And I was like, fuck you, yeah, burn, dude. And then we became fucking best
boys.
Friends.
No. So the next day, the orange line in the valley, right?
Yeah.
There's that stop right next to Valley College. And we met up. There was this place called eSpot that was like those old internet cafes where all the homies would go play fucking
Counter-Strike
and shit. Yeah. And Battlefield 1942, all that shit.
And do meth.
And do meth.
And do meth. Yeah. Yeah.
That's, or Badlands in Hollywood, if you remember that spot.
Yeah.
And anyway, so we went to the orange line and fucking, we were smoking weed in this bush. Like,
yeah.
Because we thought like, oh, you know what's a good idea is like if there's 6 kids in the bush next to the orange line as opposed to just like at the orange line smoking weed.
Someone brought a bong?
So, yeah. Brought a bong to the bush, hit it and threw up. And yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And yeah, that's how we.
That's how we met. So fast forward, dude. You know, we're getting older. We started doing drugs. We started partying. I don't know how much time we're supposed to take, but it might be a minute. Anyway, so. A week goes by. We all got in trouble, yada, yada. I get sent away to Colorado. And that's, so obviously, like while we were I was in LA, we were homies with all the Juggalo dudes. They were cool with us. Like I was, you know, getting taken care of by all of them because whatever. And when I'm in Colorado, we're at this place called Royal Gorge Academy in Canyon City, Colorado, and there's literally nothing. You know what I mean? And like within a 50-mile radius, there was 16 like supermax prisons and some shit. And like the sheriff lived across the street. Like there was no, there's no getting out of there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was on they had like squads or whatever. And I was on the squad and my bunkmate was this dude, Kyle, from like, I don't know, Grand Junction, Colorado or something. And he was a Juggalo. And he snuck in a Walkman and he had one mixtape with all these ICP songs and like Twisted songs and shit. And he's like, yeah, man, you're my boy. And he like handed me the Walkman and like looked at me like, what are you going to do with that thing? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it was like he handed me a gun or something. You know what I mean? Like I took the Walkman and he was like, all right, work. And like dapped me up. So that's how I got down with the clown, dog.
I just followed Pat. I followed
too. So I come back and we're in high school now. I'm full Juggalo, dude. You know, I was riding my homies and shit, and they like, they rolled up to the house and like, they didn't even say what up. They just like, when I got back to LA, they rolled up and the first thing they were just like, whoa, what up, fam? That was it.
Oh, and like, you were on right there.
I heard it and I was like, yes. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Yeah. I was on, dude.
That's the embrace.
And how I got out pretty quick, I got sober.
Oh, right on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I was in rehab and I was hanging out. And I was like doing my whole jug thing for a minute. I was, you know, I think it was even like, you know, friends of Keith and like friends of my dad and stuff like that who were just like, yo, dude, that shit is fucking lame. And I was like, at first I was like, what, motherfucker? Because like, it was always like that.
Of
like,
course, that's, you know, your shit.
And it's, no one really believes me because everyone, how I feel is everyone wants to be cool. But like, you know, when you're around now, like there's all these dudes who are maybe a couple years older than me. And everyone's like, oh yeah, I was a fucking punk rocker back in the day. Like, maybe some of them were, maybe some of them weren't. We don't have to call anyone out. But, but like, my parents were fucking real deal punk rockers. You know what I mean? Like, and
their son was a real deal Juggalo.
So, but that's the thing though. It's like, you know, when you're growing up and your parents, you know, your parents are pissing you off, dude. And your mom's like this fucking bitch and hairdresser who, you know, is homies with all like the OG LA punk rock people. And your dad's kind of pissing you off too. Like, what do you do, dude? When like those, they already listen to shit that pissed their parents off. So I was like, fuck you motherfuckers, what up? ICP, bitch. You know what I mean? Like, it worked.
You could be a Juggalo or you could be a Republican.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You kind of had two choices.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
And they were, it was on the fence too. It was kind of like, we don't really know which one to rather have. But anyway, so yeah. And then I got out and I was really, I was very ashamed of it for a really long time.
Of being a Juggalo.
Oh yeah.
Of used to being like
a Juggalo.
He's sober, totally. And someone would be like, "Used to be a Juggalo." He'd be like, "What the fuck,
dude?" Because it was like
his entire arm was a fucking Juggalo tattoo.
Well, what I was getting at was like, dude, there was like six of us. You know what I mean? And like we go to house parties and shit, and immediately we were like everyone who was cool or jocks or they were now the punk rock dudes or whatever, we got beat up by those dudes. Mm-hmm. So like, we were like the outsiders of the outsiders. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it made us like even more close as homies because we were like, fuck everyone, you know? Yep. And then, you know, drugs get involved and it's not really like that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so.
Are you in contact with any of those dudes anymore?
Oh, most of them are dead.
Oh,
a lot of them are dead. No, it is what it is. A lot of them are dead. A lot of them are in prison for a long time. And then
the rest just suck.
There's that crew who's just doing the same thing. You know what I mean? Like, and a lot of those dudes, like, do you guys have you ever had a homie who's just like, that dude's never going to get sober?
Yes.
Yeah. One of these dudes in specific who I lived with in Panorama City, and like, he was a Juggalo. His little sister was a Juggalo. And, you know, it was a pad with like 12 people in it and everyone had a dog. And like, everyone was a Juggalo except his parents,
uh-huh,
who lived on opposite sides of the house from each other with their new significant others.
Wow.
We would just get high.
Oh, dude, I was afraid to go there.
Yeah. And that's, you know, we just shoot heroin and shoot speed and do Juggalo stuff or whatever. So what I was getting at is when I got sober and I was ashamed of it, man, it was like this thing I had literally been like, literally getting in fights just because of the music I listened to. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then there was like the cool flannel wearing AA dudes like, yo, your shit's weak. And I was like, what, motherfucker?
Yeah.
And I was newly sober and omega sensitive. And you know what I mean? Like, a dude who really badly wanted to be super tough, but just was just way too sensitive to be as tough as I wanted to be.
For the record, I backed it.
Yeah, Keith was way into it.
I back it. I think it takes more balls than anything to be that.
Oh,
like,
for
yeah,
sure.
I was a juggalo. Like I.
Oh yeah.
I you know from day one yeah. I was like I fucking back.
Well, in many ways too, like as like punk rock has become like commodified or yeah. hip hop or anything that you were maybe into, if you grew up in a neighborhood that didn't have that,
yeah.
and you were if for you it was juggalo, for somebody else it could be punk rock, you know, whatever. For your parents yeah, yeah, yeah. it was punk
it's
rock.
It's a hard label.
And it's just a thing, and so you whatever you get into at that point, you're all about it, you
totally.
Know? And
well the hatred fuels it.
Yeah.
100%.
It makes it easier to do.
And it was
do.
Like, I would be around my dad, and like he'd tell stories of like working at Okie Dogs in the 80s and shit.
Dude, I think I know your dad.
His name's Lazy.
Was he in Lads?
Yes.
Dude! Are you kidding me?
Yeah. So, Patches.
That shit's crazy!
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's your mom?
Dee Dee. She used to cut hair, paper, scissors, rock back in the day.
Dude. That is so fucking crazy.
Yeah. So they were OGs. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So like when I grew up and I'd hear just them doing pretty much what we're doing, talking about growing up, it was like, holy fuck, it's so weird because we listen to completely different music, but it's the same fucking stories.
Oh, no, it's completely the same story.
Yeah. Totally the same yeah. stories, you know? And I think when I explained that to my dad, he was kind of like,
oh, okay.
I still don't really fuck with it, but right. like I get it.
Yeah,
you
totally.
Know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now, but like, dude, now I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Like. It just yeah. is what it is. And it was part of my childhood and growing up. And it was like, it was actually pretty fucking rad. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like me and my friends would get in a van. Like, so they have the Gathering of the Juggalos in Southern Illinois, you know? And, or they did back in the day.
Now, well, when you say a gathering of the Juggalos,
it's literally
how many people?
25,000.
Fuck. From and all over. And you're going to Illinois.
Yeah.
So everybody's 25, on the pilgrimage.
Dude, you don't want to go
it's,
there.
It's,
everybody's
yes,
on the pilgrimage.
It's fucking crazy. It's
a bunch of outsiders of outsiders that all come to Illinois to yeah. just be like,
and
we're home.
The yeah. weirdest yeah. group of people of bands play. Not yeah. even people, just bands.
Because like, it's a commitment, dude. If you're going to be a juggalo, it's like, it's a commitment.
100%. You know? So we yeah. drove all over the place. And when I was like in 09, what is it? In 2019, I'm 25. So yeah, 09, I was 15. My buddy Harlan, his dad, funny enough, works for, or owns a production company. And he was like, yo, Harlan, take one of the vans and you guys can drive out. You know what I mean? And I was
thank
like,
thank you, Harlan.
I was like, fuck yeah. You know? Out. So I whoop, told whoop. My mom, yeah, whoop, whoop. I told my mom, I was like, yo, mom, I'm going to the gathering. And by this time, it was like, she was way into it. You know what I mean? Like, she took care of everyone. She got a 17 tattooed, which 17. So
it's
when
the,
I see
the number,
when I see people out their first record, they only sold 17 copies. So all like the Juggalo gangs put up 17 instead of 13 as respect to the first 17 Juggalos.
What?
No yeah.
Dude, can you guys trace it? Who were the first 17?
No, I mean, it could have no one else.
Could
have been it was in Detroit.
It could have been them.
They, but their first record had like, right. had Kid Rock on it and shit.
Because
they're from Detroit.
Yeah.
How come they don't do the pilgrimage to Detroit?
Because they literally need an open field of nothing
dude, okay,
to
so,
do this.
Okay.
So
yeah.
anyway, so she was into it. So she was like, all right, fuck it, cool. And she was like, you know, she's one of us. And fucking, she was like, all right, how long are you going to be gone? I was like, I don't know. We're going to Illinois. The festival's 5 days long and we're driving there. So I don't know, maybe like 10 days. She's like, all right, cool. Here's $200. You
God
know what I mean?
Damn.
Which I was like, that was the most money I ever had.
Of course.
Yeah. You know
like,
what I mean?
That's like 20 grand.
I was like, what yeah. the fuck, or mom? You're hooking
grand.
Me up.
$2 million.
Yeah. It was a lot of money.
Did you go to the gathering too, mom?
No.
So
no,
check
no.
this out. Harlan pulls up. We get in the van. We get out of California. He goes, yo, you got any gas money? I was like, oh, yeah. How much do you need? He goes, I don't know, probably about $200. And I was like, fuck, dude. So I handed him $200. So I had $0. So. Yeah. We get there, and the thing that was cool about the gathering, dude, was besides it was a 5 day party, and I saw Guar play, and then I saw Guar play, and then right after him was this white rapper dude from Memphis named Lil White. Do you know how it is, Danny?
No.
Do you remember the OxyContin
oh,
song?
Dude.
Oh, yeah.
That dude.
Yeah,
that is
yeah,
a,
yeah.
He's
so
a pharmacy
that.
Rapper.
Oh, yeah. yeah, he raps for pharmaceuticals. Yeah. There was a band called Dark Lotus playing, and then right before, or, and then right after was Psychopathic Riders. Whoop, whoop. And,
it's so, the same group with a different name.
Yeah, same,
no,
same dude.
Straight
the
up,
only,
put a bandana
yeah,
on their
the only,
face
the only
and change their fucking name.
Yeah,
no way.
Yeah.
Same
up.
Exact.
No,
group,
they don't
dude.
Put a bandana. They have like 40 fucking bandanas tied to every part. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they get off stage, put on bandanas, and come back on.
And Psychopathic Rider starts, dog. Anyway, yeah. So that we were drinking that fucking neon blue Mad Dog 2020. You know what I mean? And it was fucking crazy. And, you know, the one thing I forgot to say, we had a lot of weed. And, like, when you go there, you got to remember everyone is from fucking Montana. Or
everyone's made the pilgrimage.
Totally.
Yeah.
So they're like, where are you guys from? We'd be like, oh, we're from LA. They're like, you got any weed? And we were like, yeah, we had a couple ounces of weed. So we just traded everything. Oh, and yeah. We got fucking, I found this dude who had meth or heroin, written on his back with a marker.
Yeah.
And we would just follow that dude around with weed. And we just trade weed and we all get fucked up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then.
Is there a bunch of nitrous there too?
I was about to say, that sounds like my nitrous game.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
you guys fuck with nitrous.
Yeah. So there's one of the ICP, like, so they have their own record label called Psychopathic Records, and they have all these dudes signed to River. And there's this one dude named ABK, stands for Anybody Killer, right?
Uh-huh.
And he was like this Indian dude, Native American dude, I guess. You're not allowed to say Indian anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so and all the artists had golf carts and would just whip around and go party with people and shit. And I like, there was a dude who had a Nas tank, and I went and I gave him like, I don't know, $20. He gave me like five of those like double balloons.
Yeah.
And I was walking around with him and hitting him, and he pulls up right next to me. I was like, yo, ABK, hit this shit. And he left. Fucking bummed me out, dude. I
was like, you mean he wouldn't hit it?
No. Or
he
just took, oh, I tried to hand him a balloon, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
And he wasn't down.
That's like a friendship mode. And he just,
yeah.
That's weak.
I was like, fuck you, fool. You ain't family. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Plus, Anybody Killer, that's such a specific name. Yeah. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of controversy about him.
It's hard to live up to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, he didn't like to do Nas with the homies, dude.
No.
He would have
definitely
time.
Not.
I'll fast forward because I don't have that much more. It's just fucking meth and Panorama City and heroin.
Yeah.
Whatever. And then he fucking got on drugs when I got sober.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
he
would, you know, his mom like was always, my pad was always like the go to the pad and get fucked up place. You know what I mean? Because my mom was hit or miss. And she would like go in and out of Tarzana and leave me with an EBT card. So it'd just be like me and fucking 30 people living in there chimichangas, like frozen chimichangas and shit.
You and a bunch of juggalos?
Yeah, tons of them. Like,
at your grandpa's house?
No, my mom. No, she had a house.
This was a,
right across the street from CBS, dude.
Oh, okay.
On Valley Heart and Radford, literally right across the street.
Yeah, we used to run drugs for downstairs neighbor.
Yeah.
When we were like 11, or 12, we weren't allowed to open the envelopes.
Yeah, she just gave us packages and we just go deliver them outside.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, I didn't even know what we were doing.
There's two lesbians. Both of them were named Candy. Swear to God.
Yeah, it's true. And they would just hand us like. Them and his mom would just be like, do this real quick. And we'd be like, okay. Like, we were kids.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And we handled business. Anyway, so, she goes to rehab. And then she got sober. And I was fucking pissed about that. She was, being a buzzkill. And and then he kind of stopped. He got sent away, too, to kid rehab.
I went to baby rehab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he'd come to my house and shit and, like, fucking fuck around. But... So I got sober, and that's when he got all fucked up, and I was trying to help him out, but he didn't want none of that, and that's where the story comes in.
Mm. Oh, that's so. He got sober, and he lived with me for a few months. He got straight. He came straight out of sober living. He lived with me.
That's when I was working at Target.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Target. Yeah. And you were still getting fucked up.
I just had started. I started doing speed, like, right around that time. Like, I wasn't, like, I'd smoke some weed, I'd drink, I'd done mushroom. Like, I'd done a few trips, like,
My last kick, I was kicking at my grandpa's house, at my grandpa's house, and he would come pick me up so I wouldn't go cop. But, he would come pick me up in this fucking giant van he was living in, and the cup holder was, I swear to God, a vial of ether, and we'd just drive around huffing ether all day.
You and who?
Me and him.
Dude. I went on a separate road as him. So in baby rehab, so I got arrested like a bunch of times in a week. And I got baby prop 36. Which was tight. It was super cool. So I was in treatment for two and a half years as a kid. they imposed a question, you know, and I was Juggalo as well. And they were just like,
he shaved his eyebrows, dude.
Yeah. You could either be a Juggalo and, you know, go to camp or take off the fucking 7XL t-shirt and stay here. And, you know, I took it off. Like, you know, what the fuck? So I stopped right then and there.
We fucked with him so hard.
Like, and everyone called me a fake.
No, there's a word for it.
A Juffalo.
No way.
That hurts. That fucking hurts, dude.
What is a Juffalo?
It's a fake dude. It's a wannabe.
It's a poser, wow. But it's like, that's like the N-word for Juggalos, dude. That, like if you call someone that, oh yeah, you better.
You're just calling someone's life a lie. Like, it hurt. And they would all say it to me, dude, and I fucking hated them. But I
wanna be Juggalo.
Yeah. Juffalo.
Juffalo.
Juffalo,
yeah,
dude.
Those are fighting words.
Straight up. Beyond. No, really, for Beyond, real, dude. Yeah.
What's a neck breaker?
What do you mean?
Oh, neck snapper.
I don't know.
It might be something
the Juggalo documentary.
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Anyway. The documentaries are fucked up. Like, you know what's I mean, it's kind of true. Like, most of the people, like, I went to the gathering of the Juggalos 3 times. And most of the people are weird fucking Midwest tweaker people, and then there's just like the normal dudes from, there's about 4.5 normal dudes from LA who are also into it.
Yeah.
So I quit Juggalo as soon as the question was asked. There was no, you know, that was done. And I went on a different route. So he stayed like all Deep Valley gangster style, and I went completely opposite. I got super into folk music.
Show him the tat, dude.
I got the stomach tattoo, Folk Life. I like lived in a van. I played in a folk band. I had a great time, but it was, you know, me and Rocco completely split, like opposites. And, you know, and I love speed. I love speed and I love my van. And it was like, I had the best time ever. And you know, that ended, I moved into where my mom, she was renting a house in Van Nuys. She left. She's like, you know, the lease, you have a year. So I called Rocco. He was getting at a sober living and I was trying to stop doing speed and just be normal and live in a house. And he was like, yeah, I'll come live with you. And so for like 4 months we had a house, and we would just do weird, like, yeah, like I loved ether. Mm-hmm. I loved those research chemical drugs like 2CI, 2CE.
This is when like Silk Road was popping.
I used Silk Road.
He'd get all that weird shit.
Yeah.
Like, dude, I'd come home from work and he'd be, you know, like covered in paint, but like nothing would be painted. You know what I mean? Like shit like that.
Like,
and
you're not fucking around.
No.
No,
like,
he's sober. Dude.
No, yeah. Wow. I was like going to
he
meetings.
He still is from that point. Yeah. Like, wow. he didn't do it. Like, I met a bunch of your homies. They would come by and I was just this weird dude. There was a certain point where I got a hold of a certain person's naked photos, a celebrity. And I was walking around from TMZ to E! Entertainment with a bucket hat and trying to sell them, like straight up soliciting.
That's amazing.
You're not supposed to say that.
It was random. It was my friend doing it. I didn't do any of that. I didn't even know who did it. So I was just, you know, I was doing my thing. We got along because we. I mean, I was still, you know, the same dude. I just liked weird things. I was super into Silk Road. My friends were like trust punks. They all had a decent background, but like they wanted to do the same thing as me, just like,
and then
live low life.
This dude I met in sober living named Drew hit me up and he said, hey dude, I need a place to stay. Me and my girlfriend just got in a fight because she started doing porn and I'm fucking pissed.
Yeah.
And I told her not to, swear to God, he said, I told her not to do porn and she punched me in the throat.
So, no. Yeah, so he moved in. He didn't stay sober. He introduced me to opiates. Rocco left for a job
when I went to Oceanside,
San Diego, right?
Yeah. and that's when I fell apart. So I started dating my other best friend's girlfriend at the time. Super funny. Rocco made I'm dating her, which obviously was a bad decision, and he was going to be crushed because he was already in distress over her. Rocco's like, dude, I've been sober for 22 minutes. I do groups sometimes. Like, let's bring him here and we'll sit him down. And we'll have a conversation about how you're fucking her.
Uh-huh.
And he made that happen. Which was awful. It was like the worst experience. And she was there too. Yeah. She just sat there next to me.
No, she was like, I'm going to leave. I'm like, no, you're not.
Yeah, no, no, no. This is healing.
Yeah,
like that. Still don't talk to that dude. So
dude, it was like our best other friend. You know what I mean?
And so that was awful. And so fast forward. He leaves. I lose the house. I moved to Texas because a relationship went bad. And I bring Drew, the guy he introduced me to, whose ex-girlfriend's in porn. Get out there. Immediately get into heroin. I tried to join a trade school for sound engineering. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't last out there. I moved back with nothing. And then I was broke. I would like go from apartment to apartment sometimes, like with my brother or, you know, someone random. And you know, that's when things got really weird. So this is a story that like,
well, to preface this, he would hit me up and I'd come over to the pad and like help him out. You know, we get food or yeah. I'd buy him a six pack, shit like that. I'm like, what's your hustle? He's like, oh dude, I found this guy. I'm teaching him how to play guitar and he's giving me dope.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I thought was going on. it was this dude at the Econo Lodge in North Hollywood. He was a weird, weird guy. He was straight out of prison. He was a Crip. He was like a bigger black dude, like tattooed head to toe. And he had really good dope and really good coke. And
what was his name? What was it?
The black guy?
Black guy.
Oh, this is about to get really weird.
Yeah. Wait. Hold on. I think I'm friends with this guy on Facebook.
Oh! Well, funny story about that guy. So this dude loved me. Like, so there'd be like, you know, 10, 12 people in this motel room. And this dude's like gangbanging on people, telling like how he's killed people, sharing like prison stories. And he'd be like, all right, everyone's got to go. And he would text me like, you could stay. And I was like, oh, fuck, dude. But he would give me free shit, like, yeah, all the time. And so, you know, he knew I didn't have money. He knew, like, I was trying anything I could. So he waited, and he waited, and he would give me free shit on the regular. And he would fucking, you know, I didn't know anyone else. I was new to the whole game in L.A. I didn't know you could buy drugs off Craigslist yet. And I didn't have homies doing this, so, like, he was my guy. And at a certain point, I got really sick. The third time, I got really sick and asked him to front me. And he said, yeah, but let me see your feet. And I was like, what? And I, you know, a few people had gone in and out of that motel and said, yo, watch out for this dude. Like, he'll turn you out. I was like, dude, this isn't, like, Basketball Diaries or whatever. Like, I'm not going to do anything. So it turns out I would do something. And, yeah, dude. So I end up giving this dude, so he loves feet. He's prison gay. And he loves like tall, skinny white dudes. And so like the first time I just had to let him massage my feet. Fine. I don't care. That's fine.
Was it a good massage?
No, dude, I was freaked out. I was fucking disgusted. And he's all
dope sick, dude.
Yeah, I don't want to touch you and shit. I was not into it at all. But
on like a technical level.
Did he do a good job?
Yeah. He was a big guy. Big hands. Big hands.
Sounds like he's
got
a lot of them.
Oh, for sure.
He was trying.
He had a fucking boner, dude. Like, he kept trying to put my foot on his dick.
Oh, yeah.
Gotcha.
And so he was trying, dude. He was trying.
Why do you want to do that?
Yeah. So that the follow-up is why he wanted to. So then, you know, that got me through, like, the night. And then next day I hit him up again. It's like, yo, dude, one more front, whatever. Just one more. He's like, yeah, sure. Come by. Come on by. Well, I was like, all right, cool. You could give me another foot massage. And he's like, no. I'm not going to do that. Rub your feet against my dick. So I give this dude a foot job with no questions. It was...
What was going on, though?
Does that take a long time?
Was it? Yeah, dude. It was... Well, I got...
What was happening? You got
the same control.
he did all the stuff. I put my feet there. I looked away, crying. And and he did his thing.
That's so sad.
It was fucked up, dude. I was crying. I was straight crying. This dude's like...
Were you smoking heroin while you were crying?
Yeah. Fuck yeah, dude. I was hey, sitting
is
there.
Is this him?
That's him.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Facebook.
Damn.
That's incredible. Yeah,
that's the man.
Hey, Danny, don't be telling, dog.
Friend him tonight.
Well,
dude, so yeah,
I'm
so.
Get, hey, I'm trying to get a massage. Yeah.
I am. So I'm laying.
He's fronting him out, dude.
You can just be like, hey, what do you think of these flippers? That little meat hook do anything for you right there?
I am. So I'm laying on the motel bed, like head away with foil, crying, and this dude is banging my feet, and wow. And you know that was the end. He tried to do it again, and
he wasn't having that.
No, I found someone else. Yeah, that's the dude.
That's amazing.
So check this out.
Live, laugh, love.
Jesus Christ.
Under that photo. Oh,
so a few days later, right?
Yeah.
I've been here for like 4 hours. And that, seeing that, hearing this, fucked seeing up. That's his picture, live, laugh, love.
It makes sense.
The best.
He's got a live, laugh, love.
I've told this story multiple times. I've never prepared for someone to know him. I've never prepared for someone to know that dude.
Never in my life.
Well, you're so, in for hey, a special. Yeah.
Up,
we've got him here. We've got him here.
Yeah, exactly.
Bring him out.
This is your life. This is your life. Come on out.
And here he comes.
Yeah, oh, dude.
So a few days later, right, he calls me. He's like, hey, I need you to come over, dude.
It wasn't. It was months later,
or
dude.
Or whatever. He was like, I need you to come over. I'm losing it. Like, all right, dude, whatever. You know, I go to his pad. We're hanging out, playing video games, whatever. He's trying to hold it together. He's like, I'm sick. I'm trying not to cop. You know, at some point, we go outside, smoke a cigarette. And he's like, hey, man, did AA really change your life? And I was like, yeah, sure. And he goes, you're fucking brainwashed. Like, he just says that. Like, angrily, very angrily.
I kicked him out.
Yeah, he like
no
tried
way.
To kick, yeah, kicks me out, calls me, and he's like, yo, can you buy me a six pack? So like, yeah, sure. So we go up the street. He gets like a fucking $13 six pack or some shit. I was super pissed about. We're in my car in my 2000 Honda Accord, and I like pull up to his house and I'm like, all right, dude, I gotta go. He like cracks open a beer and like starts talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's like telling me all this stuff, and I'm like, all right, man, that's fucked up. That's crazy, you know. I got a split, and he's like, and then I gave this dude a foot job. And I was like,
no way.
Just like says it, super matter of factly. You know what I mean? And I was like, you know, my dad works at a rehab. I said, no, you know what I mean? And that was it.
Yeah, it was
that's
amazing. And that, because yeah, that was there was, you know, that was the lowest.
I love you, that little bit of just a tried yeah. a bit of glee you
that was
on
it.
Top of that there.
I was trying to think. I mean, so but the last thing I wanted to say was what you said about what you do when you got sober. So I got sober you know, a little bit after that, I don't know how long. And I was lucky enough to, you know, I went through treatment in Santa Monica this last time, and there was this girl who I used to know like back in the day, and we have a like me and this girl is toxic, dude. I could just go on forever. But what she introduced me to is role play, butt plugs, and that's pretty much it. And that was how I spent my first year of sobriety. And that was I mean, it really did do a lot different.
The girl who lived down the street from here?
No, this is a different one.
No, she did a different type of.
But you stayed sober.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
There was a girl down the street from here who taught me about incest role play and anal with cocaine. And we could see her house.
Sober.
That wasn't. That was not.
You know, I had this girl. I was just identifying with the getting through your first year of sobriety with butt plugs.
And saying that I had met this girl while I was sober and I was just sort of struggling in my sobriety and stuff. And anyway, I was at a coffee shop and she was talking about dressing up like JonBenet Ramsey for Halloween. My name's JonBenet. So I was like, so I told her, you know, my name's JonBenet, thinking that, you know, this would sort of get me in good with her and maybe we could have some fun. And she's really excited about it because someone had just been caught that was who they thought had murdered JonBenet, this guy in Thailand who taught at a girls' school, believe it or not, whose name was also John. And so I was like, she's like, well, you come out, dress up like the murderer, and I'll be JonBenet, and we'll go out. So I'm thinking this could be really pretty cool. And so then we're talking, and we're in the middle of talking, she actually takes out of her puck book all these crumbled up articles from this is a long time ago. This is like 2006. So it's just the 20th anniversary, you know? Yeah. So that was like the 10th anniversary year. She died in 1996. And she pulled out all these articles of the last 10 years about the murder and the current articles about this recent guy. So anyway, I leave this scenario thinking like, I just got like a great date. And I go and I'm just go about my business. And I was talking to a friend of mine. He goes, are you fucking crazy? She's like going to kill you. She's like, she's out of her mind. And she's like fucking got crumbled up articles about it in her pocketbook. She's like, want you to dress up like a murderer. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Do you know what I mean? And I won't tell you how many years I've been sober at that point. It wasn't 6 months, I'll tell you that. And it's like, you are so fucked up. You know, that's fucked up. And I swear to God, like, I had no idea. I was like, it didn't occur to me. I was like, oh my God, you're right. That's just terrible. I was like, what was I thinking? This is terrible. So I call her up. It's like before Halloween, I say, look, I can't do this, can't go out. And it was just the most anticlimactic, ridiculous thing. And I swear to God, from that point, I think I've been more sober than certainly I was before that. But because it was just so striking to me. She got really angry at me and she goes, I thought you were neat.
Oh man.
And I was like,
call you Jeff Lowe.
That was like what she said. That was her response. It wasn't like, you fucking asshole. Like, you know, you know, I'm going to cut your throat.
No, she was disappointed.
You know, she's like, I thought you were neat. And I was like, neat? She had to crumble up articles and she wanted me to go out like and be her murderer. And I was like, neat? It's like, how does that correlate? How does that word correlate with your psycho fucking crazy murder role play
that would have been the best
that
sex
you wanted to do? And since then, I feel like it was like a moment for me. It's like, I swear to God, it was like up till that point, I was like not a well sober person. And I felt like from that point on, I was like, oh my God, you're fucked up. You have some serious problems that you need to address. So I started going to, you know, psychiatrist. I've changed completely. Just putting that out there.
How long have you been sober, John?
Oh, Jesus. 30.
Oh, wow.
4 years.
Oh, wow. Shit.
Damn. Yeah.
34 years.
Yeah. 1985? Is that right?
That's impressive.
Yeah.
But
what I like to say is it's 34 years I haven't had a drink.
Yeah.
Because I'm so like, you know, and that was 2006. I was going to do that thing. And I had no idea in my brain that was inappropriate. You know what I mean? And I seriously started to get into therapy and get into like really thinking about like what kind of person I was. Because you can be so toxic, so fucked up, so unsober without drugs and booze. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I would say my first 20 years of sobriety were pretty fucked up. You know what I mean? And then it's only really been the last, like, I would say 14 that have been pretty good. You know? But I totally like know what you're saying. Everything you said made perfect sense to me. I mean, maybe not the foot massage.
So, there was no choice involved in that.
No, I totally got that too. It's just a hard thing to visualize. Actually, it's like easy. I totally visualize.
You know what?
I actually have a perfect picture of it, and it's really fucking my head up.
You know what's fucked up is he never offered me a fucking. He never offered me a fucking foot massage.
You are a tall white guy too.
Yeah, I know,
dude. I don't know what I did.
Demographic. Yeah, that's fucked up.
Yeah, I got the free hook.
What?
Just send him a picture of your feet, dude. Be like, you'll never have these.
Thanks for listening. Please follow us on Instagram at It Is All Bad. Click on the podcast. Please subscribe and give us a review. 5 stars. Thanks. See you guys next time.